Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Just to recap what we're doing, anyway, for this week and some weeks to follow, in my New Year's show, I talked about love, compassion, gratitude, and the Japanese concept of heart-mind, kokoro, which seemed to all come together for me while I was contemplating our new year. And so I just thought I would continue on with this theme and ask some people what topic they wanted to talk on and how, and it's been interesting to see how gratitude and love and compassion have come together to be threads in the conversation, no matter what the topic has been so far. Today I have with me Upasana Grugan. She's living in Eugene, Oregon, and she spent a lot of time in South America, and we had her on the show a few months ago, I think, and I asked her if she would like to be on the show again, and she said yes, and she's chosen the topic of compassion, which is a great one. So, Upasana, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me again.
You're welcome. And tell me, what brought you to the topic of compassion?
Well, compassion has been a word and a concept that's really flitted around in my life for many, many years, way long before I ever even knew Reiki. And it's a very, as a concept in my life right now, presently, especially with the care of my mother, that I just redefine and redefine and redefine in the way I live it out. So I thought it would be a good thing to talk about. I think one of the first remembrances I have of compassion was back when I was in college, which was many years ago, and was with a loved person that I had in my life at that time. And this person spoke Spanish, and I was very upset with this person because they didn't seem to show any, what to me was compassion for the process I was living in, and I kept on saying, you just don't have any compassion, you just don't feel any compassion, and the person turned around and said to me, well, why should I pity you? And it really gave me a start because I never thought of compassion as pity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that started my journey into really look into if maybe I was using the word wrong or if culturally the word compassion is different things in different cultures, you know, and it's just a word that in many languages sounds the same, but maybe underneath it, it has a different meaning.
Uh-huh.
And so that was kind of a start for me, and that was, as I said, when I was probably in my early 20s, so that's been quite a while ago.
Oh, wow. Well, we won't go into that part. Having compassion for you.
Thank you.
So tell me, In the Spanish language, then, is compassion and pity connected, or was that that person's take
viewpoint
on the word? Yeah.
I really think it depends on where you are in your own personal process and what kind of a life you live. I think the common everyday person in the street might think of compassion as pity. You know, it's very associated with the church and the poor people and the beggars and the compassion of Christ for healing. And it's a word that's very much attached to the church, the Catholic Church specifically. I do feel that the more I get out into quote unquote the healing community, the concept of what compassion is changes.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's not so much that bleeding heart type concept.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a more broad term. It's more linked with kindness and heart and love and feeling than the actual emotion of pity being, you know, feeling sorry for somebody else. So that's where this person was going. It was, you know, why should I feel sorry for you?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's not what I was talking about at all. Actually, what I was talking about was empathy.
Uh-huh.
Empathy is another word that's similar to compassion.
Right.
But it's not the same.
Uh-huh.
And empathy is where I was at that time in my own process.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what I could really understand and link with was empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. So what's empathy?
To me, empathy is to be able to feel for another. A lot of times, because you've gone through the same thing, to me, empathy is, I mean, this is my definition where I am, is more on an emotional level. So if I, I don't know, if somebody falls down and bumps their knee, and I've done the same thing or something very similar, and my knee has gotten swollen, I kind of remember my own pain there. Well, it doesn't have to be physical pain, but I can remember my own pain there, and I empathize with the other person, what they're going through, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I have explained it sort of to myself. So for me, empathy might be one of the first steps to actually having a compassionate heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now you've combined a couple of terms, and now we're into compassionate heart. So, tell me what that means for you.
Well, over the years, right before I did second degree Reiki, I went to have a reading with a man that is known in the Reiki community by a lot of old timers, at least, and his name is Tom Heckel.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was in Chile, and I had gone to Chile to take my second degree, and I was all nervous about it. And somebody told me about this incredible man that lived up in the woods, and he did readings. So I got an appointment with him, had to go there. And my question for him had to do actually with the Reiki that I was doing, because I did a lot of Reiki treatments at the time. And I always said, why is it that I end up feeling or I end up having symptoms of what ails that person,
mm-hmm.
you know, or what that person's going through. So he went into this incredible, really incredible dissertation about compassionate attachment and compassionate disattachment. From that conversation, or actually that it was more of a monologue because it was a reading that he was doing,
mm-hmm.
and over the years of working with people, I have come to feel that a compassionate attachment would be the wanting to fix the other person and actually many times feeling the exact thing on an emotional level because it's coming from a place of lack in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not full.
Mm-hmm.
So then, as I have worked with people over the years, because it's been, you know, I don't know, 35 years now that I've been working with people that are suffering and hurting and in pain, I have become become more mature, and I had become more full because of my own healing process.
Mm-hmm.
So I no longer touch that place in them. We no longer link in that place,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the place of hurt or
uh-huh.
whatever. I understand it, and I feel for the person, and I certainly would hope that, you know, I would want that nobody suffers pain, but I do understand that it's necessary. So, to me, that is closer to what compassion might look like. I don't say that I have arrived to have, or that I do have a compassionate heart now. Probably not. But I'm on my way to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, empathy is when you're touching your own process with that other person's process. And compassion is to be able to get beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's, as I said, that's my story around this.
Right. Okay, so, you know, kind of on a psychological level, there's a belief that says that if you haven't experienced it, or you don't give it to yourself, then you can't really give it to others. Do you feel that that's true about compassion? That first you must work on compassion for yourself?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the greatest compassion is the healing process of yourself, which for me is always ongoing. So this is why I talked about bringing in my dear mother here. My mother is a source for me to be able to be more unconditionally compassionate. If I can use that as a term. I don't even know if that makes sense, but...
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't to me, actually.
Right. Not to have a vested interest in the outcome, but rather to recognize that she, speaking of her, is suffering,
mm-hmm.
that I do what I can for my own process to address the suffering,
uh-huh.
but it's not necessarily going to remove or change her suffering.
Uh-huh. So maybe you need to tell more of your story because it feels a little strange.
It feels strange.
Yeah, well, it doesn't feel strange. It just, it's hard to grasp the concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's hard to put into words, actually. Well, I have an older mother who's in a skilled nursing facility, and I have a very difficult relationship with her, and she is quite abusive, and yet I'm the only caregiver. So, whereas a lot of other people would have just dropped the whole thing of care because of the abuse, I have continued to be present in her life and advocate for her and so on and so forth and go back. So, and it's very, very, very hurtful. And yet there's a driving force. It's hurtful for me, and it's very upsetting for her. Our relationship is very upsetting to her. So where compassion comes in for me now is it more compassionate not to attend to her? Is it more compassionate? I would have to use a very simple example, you know, not to get the things that she needs, like her macaroni and cheese and her, is that showing more compassion than actually trying to fulfill her needs? What is best for me at this time in that process, to me, would show more compassion?
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Somewhat. So, because it's so painful for you. So let me just recap a little bit. So because it's so painful for you to go and visit her and take her food or whatever she would like to have at that time, along with the feeling that you're caring for your mother, which must be a good feeling for you, you also receive her comments to you, which are painful emotionally, and yet you keep doing it because something compels you to do that. And so in that, you are gaining what you're doing your best. And I think, you know, for all of us as human beings, that's one of our primary things, is to do our best in any situation. So this is what you're doing, I would imagine, is your best. And but the question maybe is what you're asking from my side is, what is the best thing for her?
Well, what is the best thing for both of us, actually?
But
I can, but I can't know what the best thing is for her.
Right.
And I can't know what the best thing is for anybody that I'm relating to when I'm giving a Reiki treatment, for instance, or whatever. I don't have a clue what the best thing for that person is. I can only do what I do. And to me, that's the compassionate disattachment. That's not being hooked up to doing it to resolve it, to make it better, but doing it because that's what I do and that's what comes from my heart. That's how I address suffering. Does that make sense?
That's how you address suffering.
Suffering or pain or somebody that would come to me and ask for quote-unquote help. Right? This is what I do. This is who I am. This is my expression of compassion.
Right. But in this case, your mother's actually asking you not to come. Is that true?
Right, exactly.
So then you're trying to decide what's the compassionate thing to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough one. And so far, you've continued to visit her because you feel that that's best for you and also perhaps for her.
Yeah, she's my mother. It's very hard to disconnect.
Right, right.
It's very hard to disconnect.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a situation where I was living with someone and they were going through, this person was going through a very painful process and very in the depths of despair, like something called, well, I would call the dark night of the soul, where there was no hope and or very little hope. And, you know, what I had to offer her was Reiki, Reiki treatments, fixing her whatever she wanted to eat, you know, somehow caring for her. And that even made her feel worse because she said, there's nothing wrong with me. So, even though she acknowledged that she was in pain, you know, deep pain. So I said, okay. And she said, just basically what she was asking me to do is kind of act like nothing's wrong. So I fought this for several weeks. And then eventually what I realized was the best thing I could do was to do what she asked me to do, because somehow that was going to support her in getting over the hump. So I did it. It was the most painful thing for me. I mean, it was much more painful than getting turned down with Reiki, because I couldn't even offer it. You know what I mean? And I had to, like, just ignore, in theory, her pain. But in the end, it worked out, and it was a really good lesson for me. I realized that in showing love for her, the best way that I could show love for her in the moment was to really acknowledge, you know, what she wanted. Now, this is very different on some level for your mom, because your mom may or may not know what she's asking. Is that true?
I really believe that she does.
Uh-huh.
I really believe that she does know. I totally do. I think she's not in touch with her limitations is what happens. She doesn't realize that she really can't care for herself or whatever, you know. And so, to me, it's the same as a mother, you know, mothering a child is very much the same. How much do you do for the child, right? And how much do you let them on their own to learn their own lesson?
Right.
To me, that's where the compassion comes in. And having the strength to let that person learn their own lesson.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, have their own process and not be involved in trying to maybe manipulate.
Uh-huh.
It's not done consciously. You know, it's not a conscious manipulation.
Right.
But yet, to let the person decide for themselves what they need instead of trying for me to decide what they need.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So to me, that has to do with the compassion. And it's linked up, for me, mostly with suffering. You know, with another person that is suffering in some way, shape, or form, whether it be physical or emotional or mental. There's another word, which is sympathy.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then there's awareness. I mean, there's all different words that at least I use a lot of times interchangeably, or that I don't really give any thought. Well, is this empathy I'm feeling? Is it sympathy that I'm feeling? Is it pity? You know, is it just that I'm aware? Is it compassion? To me, compassion is the overall umbrella for all of these.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, in compassion, in a compassionate heart, you're going to have all of these things at some time for me. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
At least in the way to get to compassion.
So how did your Reiki practice support your growing into your understanding of compassion?
Well, you know, most in my experience with Reiki, most people don't come to receive a Reiki treatment or take a class unless something's gone haywire in their life.
Uh-huh.
In their life, or somebody that they love very much, or you know, somebody close to them, other than service people, and you know, service people, doctors and nurses and such, therapists and things like that, will come to further their education. And, you know, that's their motive, at least. So the classes over the years and the people that have come and been on my Reiki table have mostly been people that are going through something that is painful. They're suffering in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just been a wonderful process of doing the treatments and learning to get out of my own way, you know, to do the Reiki more and more and not be so involved in their personal process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because for me, practicing Reiki is not being a psychotherapist, and it's not being whatever, a nurse or a doctor, because I'm not, and it's giving the service of putting my hands on the person or teaching the person how to do that themselves. And then I feel my part is finished there.
Uh-huh.
I might continue to have a contact with that person if they want to. You know, I could have a friendship later on, or they could come back many times, or over the years, especially with students, continue to grow with that student. But so every time I give a treatment, I'm afforded an opportunity to go deeper into my own healing process, into my own definition of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the way it's my touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
Reiki is my touchstone for my own healing process and for my and compassion is part of that healing process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So in light of, well, I'd like to just take another angle at your relationship with your mom, just to use this situation as an example, because I think that there are lots of us who have difficult relationships with a parent, either a mother or father, or maybe even another family member. And, you know, in my generation, we're all getting older, and so our parents are, of course, older and in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. If they're still alive. And so at this age, care becomes an issue in the sense that in our society, especially here in the United States, multi-generational family dwellings are not very common. Although because, this is an interesting reversal, but because of the downturn in, quote, economical downturn, people are starting to live together more. So their, you know, grandmothers are starting to come and take care of their grandchildren while their children go out to work and so on. And it becomes a very interesting thing because I feel that part of what's happening in our country today and also around the world to some degree is a feeling of separation, like a separation from our blood family and a separation from this core of, let's see, how can I put it, from a kind of still point from which we come. And in that separation, we end up separating from within ourselves, like all these different personas within ourselves get separated, and then we can separate from our heart, or we can separate from, you know, our caring or our compassion. And in that, we end up being able to do things like kill people or really hurt them or just remain separated and not caring. So you know, there's all these sayings about you can't take it with you and money doesn't buy happiness and so on. Certainly it hasn't done that for the United States as far as I can see. And this economic downturn seems to turn us back to ourselves and to find our home space and to maybe find more of a connection rather than a separation.
Mm-hmm.
So and this is especially poignant when we talk about older parents. And so there's this question of separation, like your mother's asking for more separation, and you haven't given that to her yet. So I'm just wondering, what might that be like if you were able to separate, and would that feel like not caring? Oh,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just
right.
Another interesting way to look at it, and I'm wondering if you're there with me at all.
Yeah, I know. I totally understand what you're saying. I think it would feel that like that because I did bring her to this geographical area 11 years ago because she was having problems where she was living alone, and she lived here on her own, but I cared for her in that I did her shopping and so on and so forth, you know, the daily things. She didn't seem to be able to drive anymore and so on. Until finally, after a couple of falls, I brought her into my home to live with us. And then she had another fall here, and I realized that I was not able to care for her 24/7 for her needs because she's not walking very much. And I just, you know, I'm still working, and the financial factor of bringing somebody into the home to care for her was not an option. So after her last fall, I found a place for her that she was able to get into, and a very actually nice place. And even that feels horrible to me. You know, it feels like I'm not doing my duty as a daughter, as a good daughter, to put her into a place. And I wrestle with that. So I have come to see about myself through my own self-treatments, because if I didn't have the Reiki, I don't think I would have ever been able to get through this time, actually. That a lot of my actions that do-gooder actions probably come from my own guilt.
Uh-huh.
And that's one place. My desire, the whole story, she was orphaned mother when she was a child, which is a small child, and lived in foster homes and et cetera. And so my projection of not wanting her to die alone, you know, not wanting her to die with the feeling that she doesn't have anyone, and yet in her heart of hearts, she has never healed that. So for her, she is alone.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's hard for me to understand that she could feel that with me being so close and with me reaching out. But in her heart of hearts, because she has not healed that within herself and is bitter and resentful, she doesn't accept me as close to her.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I say that the compassionate part has come in just in the last couple months for me, out of exhaustion of trying and trying and trying to get to that place to fill that hole in her. And it's not happening. You know, it's the reverse is happening.
Right.
So when you say, how would it feel if you didn't do what you did? That's exactly where I am right now. That's what I'm trying. And it is really difficult because it feels like I'm a bad person.
Uh-huh.
And I have realized that the shift has to come inside of myself, in my concept and my definition of what help is, what support is, what compassion is,
mm-hmm.
you know, what sympathy is, what kindness is, what good deeds are. You know, I realize that I have to have a shift in that. My mother's forcing me to have a shift in that, at least with her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's a no man's land for me. I mean, people can tell me things and their words, but I haven't been able to embody this. You know, and I'm right now in a very painful place. It's like I had my mother go to the doctor's the other day and ride sores, and I've always taken her. And for me, I couldn't sleep the night before because it was like sending your child out to walk to school for the first day by themselves. You know, I had a really hard time of letting go. I was worried that she wouldn't get there, because it's a door-to-door service, that she wouldn't find the doctor's out. You know, it was just a whole thing to worry about.
Uh-huh. But was she okay?
She was fine. Of course, yeah. She was fine. I was the one that was going through this process.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when you talked to me about talking about compassion, I mean, it was just at the right moment when I know that I am again redefining this.
Uh-huh.
You know, again looking at it. Uh-huh. Again seeing where I am.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating because, you know, I have been doing these workshops called Responding with Compassion, and they're for masters who have had many years of experience, and in some way it's a kind of communication workshop, but it's much more than that. It goes deeply into motivation, and what I realized as I was facilitating these groups, that we spend 1 week and 1 year, because it's a week each year for 3 years, and 1 year and 1 week is spent on motivation. Like, where does our communication come from, and what are the filters that we have, and what can we find in ourselves that bends, you know, where we are and gets in our way of being compassionate. And for me, compassionate has to do with being able to be passionate, being able to be full of feeling, and to not distort it because we feel like this is not okay, or it would be seen as something that's different than what we mean it to be, and so on. So it means to be full of feeling and to be able to act from that feeling, and at the same time to be able to listen. So that's the second week, to be able to listen to what others are saying and take that in and modify our actions, not because our feelings are damped down, but because, you know, there's another part of the communication that's coming to us. So it's an interesting play, this compassion, because, as you pointed out, it takes not just the person who is we could call being in compassion because your mother is suffering, but the other way around, that as she's suffering, she also must have compassion for herself and tell you what her truth is. And then somehow you need to work out a compromise in there. So it's difficult because, you know, it doesn't seem like a very... It always seems like it comes in situations where there is no room for compromise.
Right. Exactly.
Now, how do we get into these places as human beings? I don't know. But one of the things that's very interesting is our kind of sociological perception of good and bad. Like, I was talking to somebody the other day, and their mother just basically wants to be left alone to die.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's very clear that she doesn't want help, she doesn't want to be resuscitated and all that. That's like one level of it. But on the other level, she's in the state of mind, if we were Eskimos, she would just, you know, walk out on an ice floe and never come back.
Uh-huh.
And to be a child and watch your parent do that, I mean, imagine what that would be like.
Yeah.
I mean, it would call up every thing you've always wanted to go to therapy for.
Exactly. Yeah.
And to be able to let your parent do that, or to let your loved one do that, and hold their honor and their dignity, you know, in being able to do that, that is a true gift. That's really a true gift, and I wonder if that is another kind of compassion where we, you know, modify our demonstration or our acting out of compassion with what the person wants. So the other kind of niggle for me is that when we speak of somebody suffering and then we are compassionate, it feels like a less and more thing, like that somehow they are less and we are more, so we can give them more so they can become not as little as they appear to be because they're suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds to me more like this pity thing.
Yeah, but you know, if you take your mother food that she likes, and she doesn't really want it, then isn't it the same kind of thing?
Well, I don't know with her, because to me it's confusing. I mean, she really demands that sort of thing. What she doesn't want is a personal relationship.
Uh-huh.
You know, she doesn't want me to go in and sit with her or go in and say, hi, how are you doing today? And, you know, what's your life like or whatever. You know, she doesn't want to be, she doesn't want that sort of thing, but she wants me to do the groundwork. You know, she wants me to go out and get these things and make sure that she has what she needs, her clothes are washed and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And she demands that. She says, you're my daughter and your obligation is to do that. And what is up for me is that if I do that, then, you know, I mean, like, if I take her to the doctors and don't speak to her, you know, she treats me like I'm a driver, a chauffeur. And I would speak to a chauffeur myself.
Right.
You know, I don't look at them demeaningly. But at the stage of life she's in, she does. You know, she sees me as a service person, not as a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what, I mean, what I, my concept, the relationship I have with my daughter is quite different, you know. So, and I do, you know, there's some mental illness there also. But she's very firm with this. She's, you know, she's in her right mind when she's, she just says she doesn't want to be with me, she doesn't like me, she can't stand me, et cetera, but I don't need to go into that. But, for her, it would be demeaning to try to help her out of the wheelchair, for instance.
Right.
You know, she'll push a hand away, and I notice this with a lot of the people that she lives with. They don't, even though they might be really shaky on their feet or whatever, it's not dignified for them for you to help them.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, it's a fine line. It's a fine line, and if you're not trained, you know, if you haven't worked with this sort of thing, if you haven't been prepared for this sort of a mental state, when people get to a place in their life where they're really unable to care for themselves, you know, they're unable to bathe themselves, and yet for them to have to rely on other people is horrible. So, you know, for me, that has to do with compassion, and not compassion of looking down at, or, but being maybe being present. With my heart, I mean, I feel that I could understand what it is not to, to, for somebody to belittle me, or, you know, I mean, that has happened in my life. So I do know what that feels like, but and being mindful and being kind. You know, to me, it's about kindness. So, but the kindness doesn't necessarily, and is not interpreted into certain good deeds. What I would think is a good deed.
Well, to the end, parents evoke a kind of process in all of us. I feel even if our relationship with our parents is more mellow than yours or less fraught, there's always a challenge for the child to become the caretaker and the, you know, and the parent to become the one that's cared for. And it's an interesting dance, and sometimes done more gracefully than others. But I've also seen that there is always this question mark at the end, like, did I do enough? Did I do what I needed to do? Was I compassionate enough? Did I give them dignity? I mean, all these questions are certainly growing edges for us. Yeah. And quite difficult. So when I spoke with Susan last week about compassion, we didn't get into this, although she's also, you know, this is a very up topic for her, having a mother-in-law and a mother in the same stage, in different stages, and just being aware that the stages can change very quickly, you know, from 1 week being capable of doing something and then, you know, noticing a month later that that capacity is not there anymore.
Right.
And then how to decide what level of care is needed. That's very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a very interesting situation, and one that we can't really avoid in our lives much. Because even if our parents have already passed on, like my dad died when I was quite young. I think I was in my 40, in my early 40s. I just think now, because my mother is alive, you know, what it might be like if my dad were still alive. And, you know, in my mind, I play over the same questions that you're going through also. So it's a fascinating... It's a fascinating process. So I just think that in our life process, we're, you know, invited to change roles and to take on this role, as we might call it, of caretaker, so that we can be compassionate with our own parents when they were parents. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like we get to care for them as they cared for us, in theory. And it allows me to see the places that my mother, for instance, really took care of me in a way that made me stronger and made and gave me a gift. And at the time that was happening, when I was in my 20s or in my teens, I thought she was being really mean. So... So the compassion, you know, moves on a timeline also,
right.
I think, that, you know, I feel that there is this interesting quality of then when you experience it, then you get to see the experiences of your past change also and heal. Is that happening to you at all?
Right. No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. and probably that's one of the biggest gifts of this whole process, you know, is things that kind of were not resolved in the past or becoming resolved. And that helps me with my daughter and grandchildren, and then we're probably not too far away from the same scenario or something similar with partners, you know. And so it's a practice run, actually. Not being a practice at all, but, you know, it's a part of our daily life that probably is not going to go away. It's not an isolated incident. It's more and more. I mean, there's more and more people that we know. more and more friends, more and more that are entering into this stage of needing more care and more understanding and more compassion. Mm-hmm. Because they're having big all of us are having big changes in our lives, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because of the age factor specifically, you know, mm-hmm. age and health. And so, yeah, I think, once again, I've always said this, my mother has been my greatest teacher, mm-hmm. Like it or not, you know, that's just the way it's been, and to be able to honor that and get through the confusing times, mm-hmm. To keep that foremost in front of me when things are really difficult, you know, that she's giving me this opportunity to further my own healing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Sounds like it's in spades, as they say. Like,
right.
Sorry to use jargon. Let's see. Sounds like it's really high, a high level of a high learning curve, we would say, you know,
uh-huh.
like there's a lot of learning to be done in a short amount of time, and you see the effects of it pretty soon. So,
yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens as you take a little bit of distance, the kind of distance that she wants, and to see if that actually makes a difference in your relationship. I'll be very interested to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
Right.
Right now that I can see, that's the only way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is Reiki is there to comfort you and to bolster your spirits when you need it. And
yes.
Well, that's wonderful, too.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, the other thing that I just wanted to say before we end our conversation is that one of the things that I believe is that love is about connection, and it's obvious that she has a deep connection with you.
Mm-hmm.
And how that connection is demonstrated is, you know, obviously something you two are working out. What would be, I think, more devastating would be indifference.
Yeah.
And that's a very cold place for me. I have a few people in my life where I was just, it has been so painful for me to be in relationship with them that I've just gone cold, basically. And so I either pretend or I've, you know, practiced indifference for so long that that's the first thing that comes up and I don't move into another space. So in some way your mom is still there and hasn't reached the indifference space. So that's, I think, something, it's another, you know, point of view that I just wanted to bring in, and also wanted to say for listeners who are going through the same process as you.
Mm-hmm.
That
well, thank you.
Seems really painful and really hateful, but there's obviously a connection.
Sure.
Very strong connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much we're able to open our arms and embrace that in a way that the other person wants is often, actually, it doesn't happen very often in our lifetimes. Like, I know so many people that I would love to, you know, embrace and, you know, be in a different space with them, and they set boundaries for me and my, you know, and how I am with them. And in order to be with them and love them and have a relationship with them, I need to listen. And the same for them with me. So I think it's our dance of human relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shall I say I have compassion for you?
Thank you. Thank you.
Which means for me that I have been able in this hour to share with you my feelings and my thoughts and hopefully not come across as strategies or do something different, but as, you know, different things to think about, because I feel that in Reiki, one of the things that is such a gift in community is that we get to see a wider horizon. You know, that we have an ability to talk with each other and give each other different perspectives, so that we don't have just a quarter of the picture. We can see more of the whole picture that's involved. And then we make a decision from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, is part of what compassion brings to us.
Mm. Well, definitely. The sharing and this opportunity to talk about it with you, I'm sure, I mean, already has, there's some lights that have gone off and as you've been speaking, and I'm sure that that is the Reiki working also, you know, this is part of our relationship and community, and is part of the healing process.
Yeah,
it's so important.
Yeah.
For me, just as important as doing my self-treatment is to be able to have the feedback and the support, etc. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for your candid sharing. And we, I do send, and I have this kind of soft spot in my heart for your mom after our talk, but especially after the last time I was visiting you, which was not very long ago, and I got to sit in her living room, so to speak. And I don't know, there was something about that that made me lose my defensiveness about you and your pain and soften into where she is. So, I don't know, I hold her in a different way. So that's really neat.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Upasana. And we'll keep you both in our hearts.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for this discussion about compassion and love and gratitude, because what you're doing for her is definitely an outward expression of gratitude. And that's very important, too. Yeah. Okay. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.